Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating experience of careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So this is your host, Bill Hendrickson, talking to you from Carrboro, North Carolina, on a cloudy and pleasant day. And we have a guest with us today. We probably should have 2 or 3 hours, but we only have 1 hour with Ted Reuter. And Ted, welcome to Time Out.
Thanks very much, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And as I said, we probably should have 2 or 3 hours with you, but reading the things that you have suggested and things about you, you have a busy life. Not much time to sit down and relax.
Why? Thank you. I teach for the University of Maryland Global Campus Political Science, and then I'm the director and founder of Noise Free America, a coalition to promote quiet.
Okay, well, let's start. Before we get into what the topic of the day was, based on the recent editorial article in the News and Observer, let's start back with your early days, childhood, and the university, all those things that brought you to where you are today.
I earned a PhD in political science from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I've taught American politics and international relations at Middlebury College, Georgetown University, Smith College, and UCLA. And I founded Noise Free America at UCLA. I found the campus to be the loudest campus I'd ever been to. And I found Los Angeles to be the noisiest city I've ever been to. I've also written a number of books. I have been the author, co-author, or editor of 12 books.
Okay, so I guess your work, your academic topic is political science in general?
American politics and international relations. I've probably taught 30 or so different courses. You know, Congress, presidency, interest groups, the media, environmental politics, and then in international relations, international security and politics, the world economy, and American foreign policy.
Okay, well, it's quite a record of academic success and interest. So I can see, as I read some of your articles, you sent me your website, and in it were a lot of articles that you've had published, touching on many of these topics, but the recent article in the News and Observer had to do with a coalition that you've established. You call it a coalition of, what's the wording of this?
A coalition to promote quiet.
For free America. Yeah, a coalition to promote quiet.
Yes.
A coalition, the definition of that, does that include other organizations that join with you? Would that be what the coalition is?
Yeah, we have we've got about more than 50 local affiliates, local chapters in more than 25 states. And we also work with other anti-noise organizations, on projects. And I think coalition involves individuals too. We're a coalition of individuals all interested in reducing noise.
So, okay, but you've done a lot of writing and publishing in topics of political science and related topics. And how did you drift into the world of science, of noise?
Well, that's a great question. 20 years ago, I was teaching political science at UCLA. And as I mentioned, I found UCLA and Los Angeles to be extremely noisy. And so I decided to try to do something about it. I was teaching a class which I created called Political Activism, Skills for Political Action. And so I worked with 14 students in the class, and we called ourselves Noise Free UCLA. And we did a petition drive. We got some local publicity. And we also wrote a letter to the chancellor identifying 44 sources of unnecessary noise on campus. He directed three of his top aides to meet with us, including the head of facilities management. And probably our one big success is that we prevailed upon facilities management to change the landscaping and lawn mowing schedule from Monday through Friday to Sunday through Wednesday. So in other words, there'd be a little bit more peace and quiet on campus for people on Thursdays and Fridays.
That's quite an accomplishment in itself.
Thank you. Yeah, I was very pleased. Yes, thank you. And so from that experience, I kind of got the bug and decided to try to form a national organization. And in the 20 years since I founded this, we have been featured in more than 450 media stories. So I feel like we've done a little bit in terms of increasing public awareness of the hazards of excessive noise.
Well, I noticed in this editorial in the NNO that there was an Office of Noise Abatement and Control within the Environmental Protection EPA, and that was removed at the time that Ronald Reagan was president. Is that kind of like a Republican activity to get rid of noise abatement and allow for a lot of shouting and hollering, like we're getting out of
happened was that the Office of Noise Abatement and Control was created by the Noise Control Act of 1972, which President Nixon signed. And the Office of Noise Abatement and Control existed from 1972 to 81. They had a budget of about $20 million a year. They were working on developing industry standards for noise. And they also were working to help state and municipal governments with their noise ordinances and enforcement. But a number of industries, especially the garbage truck industry, complained to the Reagan administration about these supposedly oppressive new noise regulations. And so the Office of Management and Budget instructed the Office of Noise Abatement and Control to shut down. And they defunded the office, they zeroed out the budget request, and no Congress has since restored the funding, and the EPA since then has never requested restoring the funding.
So there has been no motion to rebuild from the government inside out.
Well, there have been some small attempts. Every 2 years, a number of members of Congress, especially the House, introduce what's called the Quiet Communities Act. There's now the Quiet Communities Act of 2021 that's been introduced. And that bill would restore funding for the Federal Office of Noise Abatement and Control. And members of Noise for America have taken four advocacy trips to Washington, D.C. Since 2013. We were going to go last month, but found out that most legislative assistants are now working from home still. And so we will probably go again in the spring when we hope that the COVID situation is much better.
Okay, so how are you building your organization? It's tough to build a voluntary organization unless you have something like a serious disease or something that affects could affect certain family members of interest. So how do you start from scratch? And you have to have some money, and you have to have, obviously you have the motivation, right. And you have members now, and you have chapters. But I've interviewed a lot of folks on my show over the years that are in the nonprofit organizations, but they're all been pretty much local, right here in the Durham Chapel Hill area. But you're trying to build a national organization, and you've got to reach out to 50 states and elsewhere. So that's not something you do in the middle of the night, lying in your bed sleeping.
No, it's not. It's definitely a daily effort every day. It's an uphill struggle. It's a massive enterprise, but we try to chip away at it. You know, one way is to do media interviews like we're doing with you, which I greatly appreciate. And, you know, I did an interview with Spectrum News yesterday, also a result of the article in the News and Observer. And every month we try to generate some publicity. We issue a press release that we call the Noisy Dozen Award that concerns a particularly noisy business, community, individual, or product. And so it's usually a community. And so we try to get some publicity out of that and, you know, get more supporters and get some local action in that community.
But you're not seeking people who are deaf or who have lost a lot of hearing. You're seeking other people who maybe be unhappy with the noise around them. Like I've mentioned in my note for you, we have mowers here where I live, mowers that do the grass here in this community. And the mowers are very, very loud. And if you're thinking, they're going to wake you up. You mentioned the leaf blowers as being a problem in some areas. I just want to know how you start building an organization that it's not an issue like War and Peace, but you have to build that. You have to build the believers that this is really an important issue, and get them committed and get them to do what you're doing and get them to put some money up and get moving.
Well, one way that we attract supporters is that we help individuals with their noise problems. We've got a section on the website, which is noisefree.org, called Ask an Expert. And we have a voluntary service from a noise control engineer and an electrical engineer. You know, the noise control engineer will help with, you know, technical aspects of noise reduction in your home, or your business, or your community, your neighborhood, and, you know, soundproofing, et cetera. And then our electrical engineer is an expert on vehicular noise. And he is one of the co-authors. We have a book on illegal motorcycle noise, which we are marketing and providing to police departments. And so probably most of the people who contact us, you know, have a problem with noise. And so we try to help them, and then we try to, you know, nurture and develop, you know, that relationship, get them more involved, you know, get them in our online discussion group, get them to form a local chapter, get them to donate, get them to advocate in their state and local communities, get them to come to DC. And so that's a big part of what we do to attract supporters. And then also, you know, when articles appear, we often, you know, hear from people. I've heard from many, many people after the article appeared in the Raleigh, Durham, and Charlotte newspapers on Monday.
So you're living here in Durham now, I guess you said to me recently.
Yes.
And so what have you been able to accomplish anything locally in Durham, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Charlotte, that has had some results and some actual noise abatement?
Well, we're just starting. I probably have to admit, I spend most of my time working at the national level rather than working on issues of the triangle. But as a result of our recent publicity, you know, we are going to be holding a Zoom meeting Sunday, October 17th at 6 o'clock. And if someone trying to organize against noise in the triangle, and if someone is interested in being a part of that, you know, they can contact me at director@noisefree.org. I recently wrote to all the members of the Durham City Council and the mayor proposing that there be restrictions, if not a ban, on gas-powered leaf blowers. And I was disappointed that only one member of the city council responded. You know, he was sympathetic. And he forwarded it to the city manager's office to point out that eliminating gas-powered leaf blowers would be consistent with Durham's effort to improve environmental sustainability. You know, leaf blowers are leaf blowers emit as many noxious fumes in 1 hour as driving a car 350 miles. And leaf blowers and other lawn equipment contributes about 10% of the noxious emissions in the country.
Wow. Okay, so you're making some headway, and the article in the paper said you had 50 chapters?
50 local chapters in 25 states, that's right.
Okay, so do you have, you're the staff.
Yeah.
Of the organization, and do you have any technical support to help with mailings or anything? Have you gotten that, or haven't you gotten that far along?
We've got a number. I probably got about 8 or 10 volunteers. And let me tell you about what one of them is doing. You know, I mentioned the fact that we have this book on illegal motorcycle noise.
Yeah.
And we have a separate website devoted to the book and the issue of motorcycle noise. And it's motorcyclenoise.net. And at that website, you can order the book, which, as I mentioned, is a guide to illegal motorcycle aftermarket equipment. And so one thing, what one volunteer is doing is writing to the mayor and the police chief of every city in the country over 100,000 population, which of which there are about 140, and, you know, notifying them of this. And also the fact that we have an agreement with a former police officer who was specialized in noise enforcement. And he is going to offer his services to police departments on how to do noise enforcement.
Okay. So you've got a former policeman himself who is helping you.
Yes. And he is based in Elkhart, Indiana. Elkhart, Indiana is probably our biggest success story. You know, one of our members was very much responsible for the anti-noise program in Elkhart. And in Elkhart, they have very stiff fines. The first offense is $250. The second is $500. The third is $1,500. And the fourth and beyond that, $2,500. And they still do now have a full-time police officer devoted to noise enforcement. And I actually did a police ride-along with one of them. And, you know, he hangs out at a designated area, and where he knows that there are a lot of people with loud car stereos and with loud motorcycles. And he sits there with his decibel meter on his phone, and anyone above 85 decibels, you know, he will issue them a citation. And one thing they do in Elkhart with the money is that they fund public service announcements both on the radio and billboards. And, you know, people in Elkhart have assured me, I was never there before the program began, but people there assure me that the noise levels are far reduced as a result of this anti-noise program, which I think should be a model for the nation.
Well, where's this Elkhart, Indiana?
Elkhart, Indiana. It's near South Bend, the home of the University of Notre Dame.
Right.
It's a municipality, about 52,000 people. And it is the RV capital of the country.
Oh, is that right?
That's right. Okay. Can't remember the name of the company, but the biggest RV company in the country is based in Elkhart.
Well, that's not motorcycles, however. That's RVs.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. RVs are quiet. I've got no problem with RVs.
No, they're quiet. Okay. So now you've got this success with the police, with the motorcycles in Elkhart. How do you pass that on to cities of similar size in a way that attracts the attention of the police department or the city council or whomever would support your recommendation and initiate that action in that particular community? How do you pass that along?
Well, I just point out that recently, in the last week or so, a city councilwoman in Schenectady, New York, which is next door to Albany, New York, the state capital, she has proposed the same thing for Schenectady, that, you know, we ought to have a full-time police officer devoted exclusively to noise enforcement. So I think, you know, maybe the idea is catching on a little bit. We also plan on you know, if we get sufficient donations, of course, we plan on doing some advertising in police magazines, you know, magazines devoted to or directed toward police chiefs and other, you know, top officials in police departments, advising them of the Elkhart anti-noise program, advising them of our book on illegal motorcycle noise, advising them that we have a police officer available to give training on noise enforcement. So, I mean, you mentioned, you know, building the organization, raising funds. We definitely need to raise more funds to be able to do, you know, that advertising in police magazines.
Well, is it costly to reduce the sound of motorcycles and leaf blowers and other noisy mechanical objects? Is it costly to reduce the noise, or can it be done inexpensively so that the owner of that item is willing to support the noise reduction without a major investment or even a minor investment?
Well, let's take the two separate issues, motorcycles and leaf blowers, because there's a different answer for each type of noise.
Okay.
With motorcycles, I think it's a little known fact that every motorcycle that comes off of the factory assembly line is quiet. It's required to be. Motorcycles are naturally quiet. They are not naturally noisy. I think that most people believe that motorcycles are naturally noisy because most motorcycles are noisy. But every time you hear a loud motorcycle, know that it is the result of the deliberate action of the owner of the motorcycle to remove or alter or modify or otherwise play with the exhaust system.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you ask about cost. It's, you know, the cost is in making the noise. You know, the lack of cost is maintaining the quiet. And what the motorcycle, and this equipment is illegal because the EPA in the regulation following the Noise Control Act of 72 issued a regulation stating that it's illegal to play with the original muffler. And it's also a violation of every or most every state's motor vehicle code, which also states that it is illegal to remove or alter an exhaust system. And so the way that these companies get away with this is that when they ship the equipment, they put a label on there on the box saying for off-road use only.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a big loophole in EPA regulation that says that it's not illegal to sell or to purchase you know, this equipment. It's only illegal to use it on public roads. And so, you know, the big pretense is the big, you know, phony situation is that, you know, wink, 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 you know, we're just going to use it on, you know, off road, like, you know, in the middle of a desert or in the middle of a farm. And actually, I am very glad to say that Noise Free America is now part of a federal lawsuit filed by a prominent environmental attorney targeting the suppliers and dealers and distributors and installers of this equipment. And case hasn't been filed yet. I'd talk more openly about it, you know, once it gets filed. But you know, I'm very excited to be part of this. And if it were to succeed, I think it would really be a very significant development against illegal motorcycle noise. Now, as far as leaf blowers, the alternative to leaf blowers, besides, you know, rakes and brooms, would be battery operated equipment, which is a little bit more expensive. My understanding is that most leaf blowers are maybe around $250, gas-powered leaf blowers, and electric leaf blowers around $350. Now, there are a number of government agencies, especially in California, which have leaf blower buyback programs, whereby they offer a subsidy to people to bring in their gas-powered leaf blower, which is then destroyed, and then they are sold a battery-operated leaf blower at a subsidized price. And I've talked to the environmental sustainability manager of Durham County, who told me that Durham County used to do this a few years ago. And she says that every once in a while, you know, someone will call her and say, you know, when are you going to do another leaf blower exchange program?
Okay, so that's the world of leaf blowers. But you're talking about motorcycles and leaf blowers. Is there any general statement you can make that would affect noise makers that we should all be thinking about and making an effort to reach orally or by letter or whatever, to get this noisemaker, whatever it happens to be, to quiet down? In other words, leaf blowers and motorcycles aren't the only things that make noise that could be objectionable. So what does a private citizen, let's say I live in my little neighborhood here that I'm telling you about. We have these mowers that go by, and if I happen to be taking a nap in the afternoon and the mower goes by my apartment building, I will not be taking a nap anymore. I'll be awake.
Right.
I guess, well, just tell me what you would do.
I would. Is this at another apartment complex or a business, or what? Who is hiring the leaf blower crew?
Pardon?
I would try to contact whoever has engaged the services of the leaf blower crew, and ask them if they would instead hire a company that only used battery operated equipment. Battery-operated lawnmowers and leaf blowers are about 70% quieter, and they also, as I say, they're a lot cleaner. They don't issue noxious emissions. I actually own a battery-operated lawnmower, and it is quite quiet. I mean, it sounds like just kind of a humming vacuum cleaner. It is so quiet. It is so much quieter than gas-powered equipment. So, I mean, you're right that one problem with noise is that there's so many different sources of noise, different types of noise that can appear at any time. And so it's a battle to try to talk to the various types of noisemakers and get them all to agree to take action. I think part of the argument that needs to be made that I would suggest that you and anybody else would make is that I think that noisemakers often don't understand just how much other people don't like noise, and also on how unhealthy noise is. I think a lot of people think that noise is simply a nuisance. It's far more than that. It's physically dangerous. It is related to hearing loss and sleep loss and heart disease and chronic fatigue. And there are many, many physical, I mean, even dementia. I saw a study the other day that noise worsens dementia. And fighting noise, it's a matter of writing letters, making phone calls, petitions. It's kind of a constant battle.
I want our listeners to know that you're listening to a conversation with Ted Reuter, and we're talking quietly about noise. So that each of us can hear each other, but we're not broadcasting out into the open air. Time Out is a program sponsored by individuals who, I guess I could call it a coalition. It's a nonprofit organization. We are supported by individuals and local businesses who want to see WCOM make its way in the community. WCOM was established in Carborough about 20 years ago, and we have programs on the air 24 hours a day. This program, Time Out, has been broadcast and heard in Rome. It's been broadcast back and forth with someone in Australia. So Time Out is not just a little back office station. It can be heard anywhere in the world. And if you want to support Time Out, you can go to our website and make a safe and secure donation, wcomfm.org, and we are a full-fledged nonprofit organization, and any donation is a tax deductible, and we are very grateful for those donations. Okay, but we're talking about noise abatement. And what I mentioned in one of my memos to you that I had lost some hearing when I was living in Jersey and working in New York and taking the subway back and forth during the day.
Oh, yeah.
And the audiologist blamed the subway noise on my hearing loss. Is that a legitimate observation?
Oh, absolutely. And there's even a term for it, noise-induced hearing loss. And there are about 50 million people in the country that have hearing loss, and a sizable percentage of that is due to noise. And also, of individuals ages 6 through 19, fully one-third of them have hearing loss, which is largely or significantly the result of, you know, wearing earbuds and, you know, stereo headphones. And hearing loss is a very significant problem. I've got partial hearing loss that I get checked every 6 months at Duke, and I'm certain that that noise is a part of it. And even worse than hearing loss would be tinnitus, which is ringing of the ears. And probably about, I think, 10 million Americans have that. And, that is just a horrible situation. I've got a friend who's got a severe form of tinnitus, and he asked me to whisper anytime that we speak. And he told me once that I laughed too much, and my laughter put him in bed for 3 days. He's that sensitive to sound because of his, previous experiences with noise. One thing I wanted to jump back at is a question you asked just a couple minutes ago about, dealing with noise in your own neighborhood and, being woken up and what to do. I think I'd like to mention, too, besides trying to work individually, that you should work with other people, or you or anybody else should work with other people, your neighbors, do petitions, work with neighborhood associations. I think neighborhood associations are a very logical venue for people to try to do something about fighting noise in their neighborhood. I mean, another thing to keep in mind, not only is there strength in numbers, but that you are not alone. I think one thing I'm kind of proud of is I'd like to think that Noise for America has had something to do with people feeling more willing to speak up about noise. Remember, you are not alone. So many people have written to us over the years saying, thank goodness I found your organization. I thought I was the only one. No, you're not the only one. There was a survey by the Census Bureau years ago that noise is the number one complaint that people have about their neighborhoods and the number one reason they wish to move. You're not alone. Don't feel reluctant to speak up about noise.
Well, that's probably the best advice you can give, because any of us who have a condition that we need some help on, we don't necessarily, we're kind of afraid to talk to others.
Yeah.
And we kind of try to keep it ourselves, and we're a little bit embarrassed about what the situation might be. And unless it's a tough medical problem, we're quiet about it, and we don't take action that you're suggesting. You're suggesting that we mobilize in one way or the other and reach out.
Right. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that no one besides the person making the noise really favors the noise. I mean, sometimes, motorcyclists like hearing motorcycle noise, but, anybody who's not using a leaf blower is not too happy about that person using the leaf blower. So it's definitely a situation of the majority versus the minority. And, like you said, people need to speak out. And, I think, like I said before, I think that noisemakers sometimes do not understand, just how much damage they're doing. I mean, in a big city, someone blasting down the street with either a loud car stereo or a loud motorcycle could wake up tens of thousands of people within a few minutes.
Yeah, I know cars go down the highway with their windows down and their radios blasting.
Right.
I guess they think they're forming their own private parade.
Well, and there are even people that make a lifestyle of making their car as souped up and as loud as possible. There are actually, throughout the country, there are loud car stereo competitions. And one of them, the winner, got up to 175 decibels. You know, she called her, this is an older woman, ironically, and she called her car the Beast. And it is literally lethal to be around noise as loud as 175 decibels for more than a minute or so. Noise, it can be physically dangerous.
Well, we don't know much about decibels. We know something about temperatures, but how does what's a decibel range that is comfortable?
Somewhere around 50 or 60, I would say. You know, certainly when you're getting up to 80 or 90, that is great difficulty. And the OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, has standards about noise exposure, that you shouldn't be exposed to, say, 80 decibels for more than a half an hour a day. You know, can cause hearing loss and chronic fatigue and headaches. And increasingly, you mentioned that you think that you experienced hearing loss from the shrieking subways in New York. Increasingly, there's really no place to hide. Daily. I mean, I just joined a gym, and they've got a very loud system when you sign in, and gave me a headache. And I asked the receptionist. She said, "I didn't like it either." And so I said, "I'm going to have to wear noise canceling headphones when I come in here to check in, so I don't get a headache." So no matter where you go, there are machines and people and devices that make noise. There's really no place to hide these days.
So these devices, what can normal citizens do in a way of general daily protection of their hearing? Is there something that you mentioned headphones, is there something that normal citizens can do, who have a normal hearing, is there something they can do to kind of protect themselves down the road against the hearing being damaged? Something we can do on a regular basis.
Number one, I would say wearing noise-canceling headphones. I have mine. Mine are Bose. I paid about $300 for them. I use them all the time. Whenever the leaf-blowing crew comes to my apartment complex every Thursday morning, I put it on. I think another thing is to just be aware of your surroundings. I mean, if you know that, a particular grocery store is very loud, both with background music and with scanners and with, backup beepers, on some of the carts, that, maybe try to make a point to not shop at that store. Or what some people do is, especially with grocery stores, go early in the morning when there are a lot fewer people there. Also, I do know from having spoken to some store managers that the noise levels for background music get louder throughout the day. So if you want to avoid the so-called background music, it's better to go shop early in the morning.
You say that, wait a minute, I like to go shopping in the morning, but the background music gets louder during the day. Is that
as the day progresses? Yeah.
And the purpose of that is what?
The purpose of that is to kind of rev up consumers to kind of create an atmosphere that they hope will be fun and happy. I think a lot of people, a lot of marketers, a lot of corporate people associate loudness with fun. Let's crank it up. Let's make some noise. I mean, similarly, a lot of professional sports stadiums, especially football, they go all out to try to create the loudest stadium environment as possible. And you know, different fans have attempted to and succeeded with creating world records. I think another reason, you know, for loudness, another reason, you know, for the so-called background music in stores and restaurants is that it is a way to keep store employees occupied and less bored. Mm-hmm. And trying to rev them up and, you know, keep them alert.
Well, I know that at full stadiums, football or baseball, they have these wave events where the noise goes from one section in the stadium to the next section until it's made the rounds from home plate to first, or as a home run of noise, I guess we could call it.
Right. Well, and also, you know, they crank in artificial sound. They play the music as loud as possible. I believe that the record was set by the Kansas City Chiefs fans a few years ago. My recollection is 127 decibels, which is way up there. And I read stories of people who are in the crowd, you know, during that extreme noise, and they talked about their ears bleeding and they couldn't hear themselves think. And, you know, they had to go home and you know, immediately go to bed, and they just ached. But a lot of them said, oh, it was worth it. It was worth it to be part of this great fan experience and, you know, breaking a record. Ridiculous.
Okay, well, I know that my wife will be happy to know that we've had this conversation, because I've always been noted for having a loud voice. And even as a child, when I would visit my grandfather, who lived in New Jersey and I lived in Ohio, my grandfather would tell me to keep my voice way down low. So I guess that's when I was, in the college world, I was doing theatrical work and working on a radio station in the college. So using my voice has been fun, but sometimes it's not as controlled as you would suggest it should be.
Well, I guess, I would say that most of the people in our group are probably not too concerned about, you know, the unamplified human voice. I mean, I don't think that, you know, the human voice itself is really capable of you know, reaching excessive decibel levels without amplification. I think the issue is amplification. The issue is stereos and, you know, other electronic equipment. So, you know, now that, you know, noise is defined as unwanted sound. I mean, to me, a baby laughing, that's obviously not noise. That is, you know, very welcome. So not every sound is noise. And certainly the sound of a human voice, I would never consider that to be noise. That is just sound, if it's unamplified.
Okay. So back to your legislative activities. You're planning a visit to the Capitol?
Yes, we definitely are. And we are going to try to press for renewed funding for the Noise Control Office within EPA. We're going to also ask EPA to enforce existing regulations on motorcycle noise levels and tampering with motorcycle exhaust equipment. Another thing that we want to pursue is that OSHA has a regulation which many people find very objectionable, and that is in terms of backup beepers. That, you know, if you go to a construction site, you're going to hear beep, 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 beep. And you also hear a lot of delivery vans and trucks beep, 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 beep. And, you know, the argument is that the constant beeping, it results in greater safety. You know, it's a warning. I would say it does not, because it's so constant. It's routinized. It's the routinization of noise that no one takes it seriously, but it's extremely annoying. To me, it's just like car alarms. That, you know, when people hear a car alarm, how many people think, a car is being stolen, I must call the police? No. People assume that 99% of the time, you know, it is a false alarm. It is a car alarm that's going off on its own. And so we want to contact people at OSHA and get them to greatly relax this regulation on backup beepers. We get a lot of email from people, you know, who are very irritated by having to hear beep, beep, beep all day if they're near a construction site.
Well, will OSHA, to get an interview with them, do you, is this a simple matter, or do you have to go through a sequence of names and numbers before you can get an appointment?
It's very difficult. You know, we did get an appointment a few years ago with the EPA, and actually that appointment lasted for 2 hours, you know, with three people. And so it's not impossible. We actually got an appointment at the White House a couple years ago, and that one's because I had a former student who worked there. So, you know, lucked out there. I don't have that at the White House now. And so, yeah, no, it's not easy. It's not easy to get in to see these people. It's a lot easier to get in to see people on Capitol Hill. Back before COVID, it was back possible actually to walk the floors of congressional office buildings and just stop in and ask to see people.
Okay.
And, yeah, we always had a group, and so they were happy to see us. So they're willing to see us, maybe I should say.
So in effect, there's more than one government agency that would have a hand in noise abatement, not just
one. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There, you know, I would say the biggest would be EPA and OSHA and the FAA, and also the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration. You know, we haven't talked about train noise.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that a kind of a maybe a bright spot is that the FRA will grant a waiver to train horns at intersections if the city government will upgrade the crossing and, you know, create more gates and, you know, greater safety. It's called a quiet zone. And there have been a number of cities which have done this. I know I was in Charleston, South Carolina recently. And I was very happy to see a picture or take a picture of a sign saying no train horn. And that was because they had, you know, applied successfully to the Federal Railroad Administration to get this waiver, so it would not be necessary.
Well, as you're starting on this venture, and there's obviously, as you're saying today, many, many sources that need attention. What could you say is your first success? What would you like to be able to say, this is our first success?
Well, I would say Elkhart, Indiana is probably our first big success. Maybe that's not what you're asking. You're asking about particular types of noise. I mean, Elkhart, Indiana is a big success in terms of, you know, loud car stereos, and in terms of motorcycles. I would say we've had success too in, you know, cooperating with, I mean, you mentioned the, you know, coalitions. We work with the American Green Zone Alliance in California, and they cooperate with the California Air Resources Board to have leaf blower buyback programs. And there are also at least 60 municipalities in the country which have banned or otherwise restricted leaf blowers. So, and yeah, you know, we've been involved in a number of those campaigns. And so, yeah, I think we've had a number of successes, but of course we hope for many more. And, you know, the biggest one would be with the motorcycle noise lawsuit. That is our biggest project at the moment.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it has had some success there. But you need, when you're starting an organization such as yours, with your own brains and your own wit, you don't have somebody standing beside you with a big pocket full of money to build a staff and run an office and do the things that you might want to do to make your organization a real success. So, How are you gonna build this up to the point that everybody's gonna be excited about it?
Well, we've got a new president of the board of directors who has been the president of the board of directors of two other nonprofit organizations, which have annual budgets around $650,000. And so we are currently doing a fundraising drive. We're hoping to raise $50,000 by the end of the year. We are also seeking, corporate sponsors and, corporate advertisers. We're also going to be going to Whole Foods and to Harris Teeter because they often have, share profits with Nonprofit Day. Whole Foods has that. Harris Teeter has Roundup, from up to 99 cents in each purchase. There's affiliate marketing programs. We're also probably going to be, selling T-shirts and mugs. And so, yeah, there are lots of different avenues to raise money. And I definitely agree with you that we need more money. Money is the mother's milk of politics. As the Speaker of the California Assembly once said, I would say similarly, money is the mother's milk of nonprofit advocacy groups.
Well, you're on your way. And I certainly hope that you can succeed, because if you succeed, and I'm sure you will, you're going to have a lot of friends, and you get some rewards other than a radio interview on WCOM and an article in the NNO. It sounds like you're on your way. What has prompted you in your life? You some of the things that you've written about in the website you sent me, you've taken issue on several things, not maybe to the degree that you've taken this issue, but what is it that motivates you to step up and write an article and try to get it published? You've had a lot of your articles published in various journals. So what prompts you to do that, and how can you how do you know that what you write is going to be published?
Well, you never know that. You never know that. But I enjoy writing. I think I've got, I've got points of view. I've got thoughts on many different issues. And I guess once you have a little bit of success in, submitting articles and books for publication, it becomes easier. Or maybe the motivation is higher knowing that there's a possibility you can get it published. I've edited books on, things completely unrelated to noise. I edited a book on racial politics. I edited a book on the international economy. And, right now I'm working on a book on racial advocacy, racial justice with an African-American friend of mine, and, principles for being a racial ally. And so, I've got, various interests, and I guess I feel strongly about things, and so I feel motivated to try to have my voice be heard.
Well, keep your message going. It's been great listening to you and talking with you today on WCOM on Time Out, and I want to keep in touch with you. At least I know how to reach you. I have your phone. You sneaked me a phone number, which is very nice, so I can call you for something, and hope to get to know you. You live in Durham now. You haven't lived here forever, I guess.
I've lived here for about 10 years.
Oh, have you? Okay. Well,
yeah.
So I may run into you at Whole Foods someday.
That would be great. That would be great. Anyway, thank you so much for having me on.
You bet, and all the best to you. And I want to thank some of our underwriters. We have several underwriters who support this show, in addition to Time Out, in addition to MidCap Advisors, which is a financial business in New York City. We also have Rising Tide, which is a financial advisor in Chapel Hill. And we also have Michael Cotter, who is a retired ambassador who's been on our show about 20 times. And
oh, wow.
He's been a dynamo he's still a very active retiree. He lives in the area, and he knows as much about world events as most editorial writers in the New York Times or the Washington Post. So next week we'll have another show on Time Out, and I want to thank our hosts for allowing the show to produce today, and say goodbye to you, and we'll see you. I'll probably see you around town, and we'll get in touch again.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Bill. Thank you.